Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host today is former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. My other co-host, District Attorney General Jennings Jones, will not be with us today, but General Jones will return on our next broadcast. We appreciate WGNS providing the airtime, and we thank our producer, Nick Coyne. Most of all, we thank you for listening. In our Cold Case Profile segment, we will discuss a case that occurred in 2007. It is the murder of someone who we can only refer to as Jane Doe, as her true identity has never been established. In our What's the Law segment, former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. will have a topic for discussion that you will find both interesting and educational. Bill's guest today will be the Deputy Executive Director of the Tennessee District Attorney General's Conference, Guy Jones. Then on our Inside the Court segment, we will tell you about recent and upcoming grand jury, general sessions, and circuit court activity. Finally, if time allows, we will offer a second cold case profile. We will discuss a murder case that occurred in 1978. This is the murder of someone who we can only refer to as John Doe, because his identity has never been established. We will begin the broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. And your family can come in and benefit from our caring, knowledgeable staff and enjoy our wide product selection, all at exceptional prices. And here at Animal City, we carry a full line of supplies for all your pets. Whether Fido needs a new leash or toys for outdoor play, or your reptile needs some new decor for his terrarium. Animal City is open 7 days a week, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants. And if you have a very large group that you're wanting Demas's to be able to cater, our catering team is going to be there and ready to be able to serve you. We have catering menus, but we also have custom catering that we can do to whatever your event needs, whether it's a box lunches for your office gathering or whether it's something more formal. We are here to be able to help you and serve you in that capacity. Demas's Catering would love to be able to serve you and to serve your families, either large or small.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
One of the toughest cases for law enforcement to solve is one where a decomposed body is found and no identification can be located. If it is a male body, the body is simply referred to as John Doe. If it is a female body, they are referred to as Jane Doe. This case involves the death of someone who we can only refer to as Jane Doe. It was November the 14th, 2007, when Detective Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department discovered the body of Jane Doe. At the time, Detective Hayes was searching for the body of another completely unrelated murder victim. That victim was Nikki Sissonoe. As Detective Hayes searched the woods for Nikki Sissonoe's body, he made an unexpected and gruesome discovery. Detective Hayes saw what first appeared to him to be animal bones, but upon closer examination, the remains were identified as human, and the remains appeared to be female. The body was badly decomposed, and no identification was located. To make matters worse, the victim's face could only be described as unidentifiable. From that day forward, the body has been referred to as Jane Doe. Her death was indeed a homicide. The cause of her death was a gunshot wound. Experts estimated that Jane Doe's body had been in the field between 4 and 6 months. When we return, we will tell you more and tell you about what you might be able to hear and know that might help you help law enforcement identify the body of Jane Doe.
I get a radio that's kind of possessed.
It's coast to coast AM overnight every night.
You have a possessed radio?
Yeah.
WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Good morning. Still quite a bit of traffic making its way down I-24 westbound as you continue towards Nashville. It's been active as far as accidents down through there this morning. We've seen at least two or three. Traffic's very heavy now inbound Murfreesboro Pike there, Highway 41, especially 41 between Laverne and Smyrna. Still quite a bit of traffic out here on 840 making its way over towards Franklin-Williamson County. Hey, make a living with a career that makes a difference. I'm talking about the Air Force. Check it out, airforce.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
Bye.
The Laverne Police Department took many steps to try to identify Jane Doe. Here is what is known about Jane Doe. Jane Doe wore jewelry, including an Avon necklace with cat imprints. She also had a ring with amber and emerald-colored stones. Also, forensic artists prepared composite drawings of what they believe Jane Doe may have looked like when she was alive. As a result of all of the investigative efforts, the following information has been assembled. At the time of her death, Jane Doe is believed to have been between 25 and 45 years of age. She was between 5'2" and 5'9" tall. Her hair appears to be dark colored and curly. Her race was not able to be confirmed. One of the strongest leads is that Jane Doe had a lot of dental work. Her dental x-rays have been sent to dentists around the state. Laverne investigators have also received assistance from the FBI, as well as National Missing Persons databases. The Laverne Police Department has worked for many years trying to identify the body of Jane Doe. Those vast efforts have yielded some information, but Jane Doe's true identity remains a mystery. Now, law enforcement once again is asking for your help. If you have information about the identity of Jane Doe, or who may have killed her, please contact Detective Bob Hayes at the Laverne Police Department. The number to call is 615-793-7744. That number again is 615-793-7744. If you wish to review the information regarding Jane Doe, or view the jewelry that Jane Doe was wearing, or view the artist drawings of how they believe Jane Doe would have appeared when she was alive, go to the internet and simply type in Jane Doe Laverne. For more than a decade, a family somewhere has been missing a loved one, and the person or persons who murdered Jane Doe remain free to murder again. Please help us catch a killer. When we return, Bill Weitzel will tell us all what's the law.
All sports talk, weekdays at 5.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk.
We'll see a few scattered showers and thunderstorms here for this afternoon with cloudy sky conditions, a high around 80 degrees. Winds out of the northwest around 5 to 10 miles per hour. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 65.
This is Jeff Graham with Tire World. I want to invite you to visit our new off-road department at our Memorial Boulevard location, featuring lift kits, leveling kits, light bars, as well as wheel and tire packages. Just come by and ask for Gator for all your off-road needs. That's Tire World on Memorial Boulevard.
Hello again, everyone. Edwin Lee Raymer here with you with the PI Show. We come to you every Sunday evening from 8 until 10 p.m. right here on WGNS. Join us for some local politics, some national politics. Again, that's from 8 until 10 p.m. right here on WGNS.
Are you ready for relief? Don't let joint pain keep you from the things you love. Join Dr. Robert Otto on Tuesday, 11 a.m. at the Rutherford County Chamber of Commerce to learn more about knee and hip pain, treatment options, technological advancements, and his work with computer-navigated surgery. Dr. Robert Otto is from the Southern Joint Replacement Institute and is a board-certified and fellowship-trained orthopedic surgeon. The 11 a.m. Tuesday seminar is free and a light lunch will be provided. To register, call 615-342-1919.
What's the law?
Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Paul, we're very fortunate this morning to have in studio with us Guy Jones, who is the Deputy Director of the Tennessee District Attorney General's Conference. And Guy, appreciate you being with us today.
Well, I'm shocked that you invited me to come all the way down here, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and you came in from Gallatin this morning. That's your home, is that correct?
I live in Gallatin and work in Nashville, so I'm always driving.
And but you have some connection here with Murfreesboro. Tell us about your school days here.
Many years ago, I was here at MTSU and really enjoyed it. The town has changed. The city has changed greatly, and you can't compare to what it was back then.
And if you would, I believe you also hold a degree in the law.
MTSU and then the National School of Law. So I had that for, I guess, going on 25 years. I've had the law license.
And I know that you worked at one time for Governor Ned McWhorter. And tell us what you did there and when that was.
Wow, that's going back. That was when I was in law school. It was a great thing to be able to come to Nashville and have a job and work around the legislature, work for a governor, regardless of what governor. It's a great honor and privilege to work with one, and pretty closely at times. But I managed to get through law school while I was doing that and worked in the legislative area.
And eventually you came to the District Attorney's Conference, and tell us who was the director that hired you and when that took place.
I was so fortunate. I had spent a little time with the Supreme Court, but Pat McCutcheon, great, great friend and a legend, really. He was district attorney in Montgomery and Robertson counties for many years, and he had become the director at the District Attorney's Conference. We had met and worked together. We had, you know, similar work, just at a different angle. And it was a great thing to come over and work for Pat McCutcheon.
Guys, some people, when I refer to the District Attorney's Conference, they say, "What's that?" And if you would, kind of give us an overview of the function and purpose and mission of the District Attorney's Conference here in Tennessee.
Well, I guess it's 60 maybe years ago that the conference was formed, and the purpose is to coordinate, foster communications between the district attorneys throughout the state, 31 judicial districts, 31 district attorneys. But we also have all the budgeting, the payroll, the training, the nowadays the computers that are in all these offices around the state. So we do all the administrative work, all the managing of the, for instance, all the people that work, 1,000 people. Many of them are not lawyers, they're secretaries and criminal investigators and victim witness coordinators, but they all are paid, and that all comes through our office.
And in fact, the legislature each year will pass a budget for the District Attorney's Conference, and then that's distributed out to the 31 various districts across the state.
Exactly. That's how everybody's paid, is through our organization.
I believe one of the most important things that the conference does, and maybe a key reason it was formed, was for training. I know years ago there were what were called step raises put in for assistant DAs, and training is now required, and that's to form a professional corps of prosecutors throughout the state. And tell us about the efforts that the conference involves itself in with training DAs and assistant DAs across the state.
I have to tell you that the training and the computer technology that we're now providing are the two biggest things that have made a big difference in how the work's done and the professionalism. One of the first things a new assistant DA is told is their obligation to do the ethically right thing. And that means you have to walk away from cases that can't be proven, where the facts are not sufficient. And that's a hard thing to do when you think someone may have has committed an offense, but you can't prove it. That's the first thing that the assistant DAs are told, their ethical responsibility to do justice. But we have a huge conference every fall where everybody that needs their continuing legal education comes to a central location. It has been in the major cities in the last 20 years. It's outgrown smaller venues, and it's been in the big cities. But guess what? This fall, it'll be here in Murfreesboro, and we'll have to use several hotels, but we'll be out here at the convention center. But we have a training that touches on all the different avocations that we have within the conference, the criminal investigators, victim witness coordinators, and that's every fall. But then we also have during the year a new prosecutor's training that is coming up next week. So anyone who has less than 2 years experience, and you know, we have a turnover. We have people that retire, people that may decide after some period of years to do something different. But we have a turnover, and we have to bring people in and train them. And it's a big effort, a week-long training where they hear about everything that they will probably encounter. We also have special trainings throughout the year on different topics. For instance, every once in a while we'll have one on elder abuse. We'll have them on child abuse and dealing with the child sexual abuse that they may encounter. So a lot of effort in that, and we're proud of our training. We think it's about as good as you're going to find anywhere in the country here in Tennessee.
And I know part of that training, and we mentioned, or maybe I didn't mention, I mentioned to you the legislature adjourned yesterday, you've touched on the fact that you do a lot of work with the legislature. And part of that includes, once the session is over, once the bills have been passed, signed by the governors, and codified, the DAs and the assistant DAs need to be brought up to speed on the changes in the law or the new laws that affect their offices. So tell us a little bit about that, please.
Well, you know, that's a big piece of that training in the fall. It's always a component of the training that we do every October to try to bring everybody up to speed on what's been done by the legislature since we were last meeting. And we now use as many as four or five folks to explain that. We divide it into subject matter. For instance, the child of sexual or child abuse. We'll have driving, you know, DUI and impaired driving, those are bigger and bigger issues, drug offenses, and then the mainline traditional things, just criminal offenses that have been strengthened or changed in any way. So every fall, that's a pretty big effort to make sure everybody's up to speed on the changes.
Guy, one of the other functions of the conference, and I know this is a word that a lot of people attach a negative connotation to, but the conference lobbies the legislature, but that probably is not an accurate description. But we have to have an idea of what's going on in the legislature, what bills are pending that may affect our duties or our jobs. And you know, looking back over the history of the conference, at one time the DAs were out there. They operated in their own sphere, in their own district. If they needed an assistant or they wanted some money, they would go directly to their legislator. And, you know, there have been some powerful men in the legislature over the years, and those DAs seemed to get what they wanted, and then there were some others that couldn't. And that was one of the reasons for the conference, is to try to centralize and get all the DAs in an organization where they could be unified in their efforts for pay raises, for more assistance, and also to keep up with the law and try to pass legislation that was affected the law. And explain your role and the conference role in the legislative process.
Well, you've explained it in a lot of ways. You know, when I arrived on the scene in 1995, roughly, at the conference, they had just, the legislature and the governor had just been able to convince the district attorneys, don't file individual bills to try to create another assistant DA or to change things. You need to do this as a group. And even though the conference had been in position or in place for some years, it still was done as you suggested, that folks would say, well, I'm going to get down to Nashville and I'm going to work with my legislators. For instance, John Bragg, what a big figure in the legislature and in the finance area. So we'll go see Mr. Bragg and see if we can get another assistant DA for Rutherford County. Well, that went by the wayside, and for the last 25 or so years, we have gone through a process of determining what needs there are and then trying to do it as a unified request. Sometimes we've been successful, and you know, as chairman of our legislative group, twice, we got significant numbers of badly needed staffing, but it's rare that we get a very big contingent. You know, our role is to advise the legislature on administration of justice, ways to improve the system, and the need for stronger laws. We're a resource in many ways. The legislature, or participating in the legislative process, is not an option. It's not a, you know, well, we'll just stay home, or we won't go over there and ask for things. Now, you don't have to ask for things every year, but you're going to be required to be there to answer questions, and that's one of the things that I've been a coordinator of. Oftentimes, the best authority is going to be a DA or a longtime assistant DA who's practiced and done the work for a long, long time, but they can't be there every day, of course, so I try to get the right folks in the right place. We have a longtime former DA right now serving as our executive director, and I have really grown to enjoy working with him. He has a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience. But you know, the district attorney currently, Jennings Jones, has been at the legislature working on various matters for us.
People might not understand this, but you know, they say, well, what's the big deal? The law's the law. But the things change. And an example would be this opioid crisis that we hear so much about. And over the past few years, that's been a big deal in the legislature. What are we going to do about it? And everybody has a different idea. And in order to do something, we've got to get a consensus on the best thing. And so that would be an example of where you need a unified group of people to put in their input. Then the legislature may also hear from the medical profession, rehabilitation facilities, and sure, things like that. But we have to be part of that, or we'll be left out. Our input won't be heard. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the great, if you think about, a lot of folks won't be motivated to try to change their opioid dependency problem unless they're motivated a little bit. And if they happen to have run afoul of the law, then having a district attorney who can work with them and was willing to say, look, if right treatment, you know, will be a benefit for you, hopefully they don't come back in the system and reoffend. But district attorneys or the prosecution, law enforcement, the treatment providers, those are all important pieces when they consider how to try to solve what we know is a big problem. Record numbers of deaths and just huge, it's a huge problem.
Yep.
There is an underground civilization.
Guy Jones.
Start your week.
The Truman Show. Weekday mornings at 9.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk. The Action Line on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
We'll see a few scattered showers and thunderstorms here for this afternoon with cloudy sky conditions, a high around 80 degrees. Winds out of the northwest around 5 to 10 miles per hour. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 65.
Good morning. Still quite a bit of traffic making its way down I-24 westbound as you continue towards Nashville. It's been active as far as accidents down through there this morning. We've seen at least two or three. Traffic's very heavy now inbound Murfreesboro Pike there, Highway 41, especially 41 between Laverne and Smyrna. Still quite a bit of traffic out here on 840 making its way over towards Franklin, Williamson County. Hey, make a living with a career that makes a difference. I'm talking about the Air Force. Check it out, airforce.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
Bazing at First National Bank of Murfreesboro gives a new meaning to pushing the bar on customer service.
First National Bank of Murfreesboro's Bazing offers discounts on medicine and doctors.
I saved on my eye doctor's exam and the glasses too.
Look how much I saved at the drugstore. Hearing services as well.
First National Bank of Murfreesboro, 2230 Mercury Boulevard. This is Freedom Morgan from First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC.
We break in with traffic, news, and weather bulletins anytime. Good Neighbor Talk is your 24/7 connection. WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
My heart beats standing on the edge, but my feet have finally left the ledge. There's no turning back. I'm letting go of the life I planned for me.
Guy, we were talking about the opioid crisis, and I want to go back just a little bit, and this will lead into something else. But you mentioned you were hired by Pat McCutchen, longtime district attorney in Clarksville. Pat passed away, and what year was that?
That was 1998, December 13th, 1998.
Suddenly, and it was a shock to everybody. A
terrible shock.
And we lost another director last week.
We did.
And that was Wally Kirby. And I think Wally had been there for, was it 17, 18 years?
15.
15 years. And, of course, I knew Pat when I became the district attorney. Pat was the director, and then Wally was the director. And Wally did a good job. Pat did a good job. Pat, in my opinion, created the modern-day district attorneys conference and set the direction for it. Wally carried that on, and now we have Jerry Estes, who was a longtime district attorney from down in Bradley County, in that area. And he's been there, I guess, 4 years or so now.
That's right. That's right.
And so we've had good leadership at the conference. And you've touched on some of the things that we've done, but a couple of things that really stick out to me. People want to think that prosecutors are all hungry to throw people in jail, throw away the key, be mean, ugly. But we know that, yes, there is a punishment block in this. There is a retribution. There is getting what is justice. But also, sometimes we don't want them to come back, so there has to be a real rehabilitation component also. The DA's conference did two programs that I'm very, very proud of, and I know you are because you were very, very involved in these two programs. One of them was The Meth is Death,
yeah,
and then the other one had to do with child support. Tell us about the Meth is Death program, the purpose of that, and why we did it.
Be glad to. Can I first tell you that I've been privileged to work for four gentlemen who have been elected by the district attorneys, and they elect a director who runs the office in Nashville, which has grown to about 30 people. A lot of IT people that do the technology and training is grown a little bit. Financial, we've had to pay all the bills, as I mentioned earlier, HR. But I've been privileged to serve with four. And McCutcheon was a legend, and it still is. And we name our highest award for Pat McCutcheon. There was a gentleman who continued to serve as DA from up in East Tennessee, Al Smutzer, who was widely known as a tough, strong prosecutor. And then in June of 1999, Wally Kirby was selected. Now, he had served for many years as an assistant district attorney, and he was just a fine, fine person. I, of course, have spent more time with him than anybody else. I sometimes was amazed that he could have been a strong, strong prosecutor, and I know he was, because he always tried to find, you know, a way to keep everybody happy, and you can't do that when you're on the side that we are. Somebody might go away unhappy. The victim could go away unhappy with the penalty, or the defendant's probably going to go away unhappy that they're having to serve. And then we mentioned Mr. Jerry Estes, who's really, really an innovator, a forward-thinking person who stepped away, did not run for re-election. He had served for 24 years down in Bradley County. And then when Mr. Kirby retired, he thought, you know, I'd like to come back and continue, because he'd been involved in the conference operation a lot when he was DA. So I'm real privileged, and Mr. Kirby certainly served with great distinction, great person. He just passed away. You asked me about the public service of public education awareness programs. There were two that were, we've done a few more actually, but they didn't have near the draw of the others. We had one on deceptive danger, which is the idea that people, especially kids, will go and buy things that seem like, well, there's a barcode on it, or it came out of the medicine cabinet. It's medicine. Well, it's not medicine if it's not meant for you. It's a drug to be abused. So we did something on that as well. But the ones that you mentioned, the meth is death, or meth destroys is what we sort of morphed it into, because meth destroys lent itself to many things you could hang on the end of that. Meth destroys lives. Meth destroys families. Meth can destroy the community. Meth can destroy the environment. You know, we were finding meth labs everywhere you turn around back 8 or 10 years ago. But we got a grant from the governor's office to put that together, and we took it from just an idea to a big statewide effort, billboards and public service announcements, and lots of personal appearances by DAs before civic groups to try to educate folks about this meth, amphetamine, and what it could do to you. It makes people paranoid. It makes them act irrationally, among a lot of other problems, but they're dangerous. People on meth can be very volatile and very dangerous. We received some awards for that. We received the national award for that, and then several, I guess, a regional Emmy for that, for the video work. We had a video that could be used in these meetings with civic groups and so forth. The other one was what we called it What's the Rush? And What's the Rush was about trying to educate, and particularly young men, of course, that if you decide when you're still a child, essentially, to create a life, if you're a parent, even though you may not think of yourself as a parent, you may be held responsible even though you're less than 18, even though you don't have a good income yet, but you may find yourself having to pay child support, and that could be a very, very hard thing for a young person. We also tried to help educate folks that a child that's brought into the world without a family or that has less opportunity for education, for health care, all these problems will probably end up in that child becoming coming involved in the law and as a defendant. They're much more likely to be involved in crime when they have that kind of situation. So we use that really try to reach a lot of young folks. We were in the schools, and it was a good thing. It wasn't just about, trying to tell folks don't have sex. It was trying to explain, here's what may happen, and it could be detrimental to your future and the future of a child. So those were good efforts. We enjoyed doing them.
And I believe that also won an award, if my memory serves me correctly. So
we do have two Emmys from those two different events.
Here again, Guy, when we do a campaign like that, we hope to benefit by providing information. It's very important for the DAs to be on board. And it was the DAs that would go and get that into the schools or other organizations where it could get out and the public could see it. I know we had several billboards around town here on those campaigns and also getting into the schools. And very important work. And it's something that when you think about a prosecutor, you don't think about them doing a public relations campaign on an issue that really affects their office and the community.
You know, that's another thing you'd asked previously or mentioned, that everybody has the perception that district attorneys, their goal is to put somebody in jail, and that's just not right. I mentioned early on that the first thing that a young person who comes into this work is told is you have to do the right thing ethically. You're obligated to that. You know, we're not there working for the victim, although the victim has a huge role and they're to be heard. They have a right to be present. We have a constitutional amendment that guarantees those things, but the obligation is to the people, the peace and dignity of the state of Tennessee, to be preserved by enforcing the laws, and some people have to be removed from the general population, and they become incarcerated. Hopefully, as many as possible can be rehabilitated in some way. Now, we're hearing all the time about how we're failing to do that. Because there's a high rate of what's called recidivism. Within 2 years, there's about 50% chance that somebody will reoffend and be back in the custody of the state or the local jail. And that's something that should be driven down over time. If you can stay away for 3 or 4 years, the chances go down a lot that you will commit another crime. But we know that there's a lot of effort being made to do a better job, or a lot of interest in trying to find out how to do a better job with folks who have been incarcerated. How can we keep them from coming back? And we're all about that. We would really like to reduce the number of people we see.
You know, the last couple of months, I had the director of drug court, what I call drug court, it's now called recovery court. I had the judge that was in charge of the recovery court to kind of explain that, and that's something that the DAs were very instrumental in getting started in. And I think probably every jurisdiction now across the state has drug or recovery courts, so we're involved in that. The other thing, this may be more on the national level, but I've heard it a lot, and it's this criminal justice reform. It's a fancy name, but there are a lot of people who believe that prosecutors just put everybody in jail. People smoking a joint, we send them off to the penitentiary. And being a prosecutor, former prosecutor, I know that's not the case. But there's this perception out there that we are a country where we just have mass incarceration of people who really didn't do much. Now, I know there are individual instances we can point to where maybe somebody should be pardoned or a second look taken. I agree with that. But has that become an issue at the state level?
That is going to become a big, big issue in the next year or so at the state level. You've hit the right theme there. You know, that if we can find a way to fix people, to help people on the front end, do it before we have to invest, either prosecute them at all. If we could figure out how to keep people from being incarcerated, and what that costs, that's great. But the other side of the coin is that when you have folks that aren't incarcerated, that go out and commit heinous crimes, people were left wondering what happened. And there was a recent case, and everyone's seen it in the county I live in, where folks know that a young man killed seven, some family members and some weren't. But the fact is, that person had been treated the same as anybody else in the same situation. He was on probation for an offense, but that would be the norm, very much the norm. And I believe they were wanting to revoke his probation because he'd failed to make meetings, and maybe they knew he was doing some type of criminal activity. But, you know, it was a tragic situation. So there's where the conflict comes in. We want to keep people safe. The average guy out here that's not breaking the law, that's going to work and taking care of his kids and, you know, doing the right thing, paying taxes and so on, he wants to be safe and his family. At the same time, we got folks out here who, if we could fix them, if we could get them to change, and that would be great. But where's the happy medium? So that's going to be a lot of discussion this year. I don't like the term criminal justice reform because the implication is everything's wrong. I think a readjustment or a realignment, criminal justice realignment, criminal justice improvement, it would suit me better. But they use the word reform, and they use restorative justice. Try to get people united with their family. You know, anybody except somebody on a life sentence or on death row is going to come back to the community at some point. So that's one of the thoughts that people are thinking about more and more, is that, well, look, let's do something to keep them from coming back. And I think the DAs are all aboard on doing what we can, but we've got the obligation to try to keep people safe.
And Guy, you and I both know, And I've heard it a million times. My son or my daughter, they need help. They're addicted to drugs. Can you help them? Yes, we'd like to do that. But you've got to remember that that same son or that same daughter broke into somebody's house, stole something from somebody. And if you've ever had your home burglarized, it's more than just the loss of property. It's the loss of a sense of security and safety. Or maybe they've robbed a store with a gun, things like that. So there's a flip side to that justice coin, as you've mentioned. And trying to find the happy medium, sometimes the pendulum goes too far one way and whatnot. So,
and we know that you can point to find some place where folks didn't do what they should have done. You know, district attorneys have an obligation to protect even the rights of the accused, and folks don't know that. You know, they are They're not going to be trampled upon in the process of trying to prosecute someone. They still have rights, and district attorneys don't want to run over those. You know, at the same time, that victim who would just assume their home not been broken into, or in my case, a gun put in my face and demanded the money that I had, and that was one occasion. Another occasion, somebody was going to take physical to assault me, I think, and I finally got to a place where they couldn't do that, but they were trying to rob me. Those are two things that I've had happen, and I wasn't in any bad, terribly bad place or any, but if somebody breaks into my home and leaves about 5 minutes before my 16-year-old daughter arrives, they need to be put in jail for a while to figure out that that was not what they need to be doing, because if my daughter had been there 5 minutes earlier, somebody could have died. Because we know that home invasions are one of the most dangerous things, just a step away from maybe a homicide even.
Well, Guy, I want to thank you for being with us. We could talk the rest of the day.
We could.
But I'm afraid we might tell some things on each other that I wouldn't want people to know, and you might not either. But anyway, appreciate the work you've done. I know when I was down there for a short period of time, you were my mentor. I appreciate everything that Jerry Estes is doing, and I want to say again, I miss Wally Kirby. He was a great friend and did a great job at the conference, and it's been one of my great privileges in life to be associated with what we commonly call the greatest club of people in the state of Tennessee, the District Attorneys Conference. So thank you, and continue the great work.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Bill.
As we end our program today, we thank our special guest from the Tennessee District Attorney General's Conference, Guy Jones. We thank our producer, Nick Coyne. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. Our next scheduled broadcast is Friday morning, June the 7th at 8:10 a.m. on your Good Neighbor station, WGNS. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For Bill Weitzel Jr. and Jennings Jones, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.